Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's Campfire.
Welcome to the Campfire. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. And I have to apologize. The show is out a couple of days late this week. Just got crushed with a lot of different things. Not bad, just busy. And the show got a little delayed, but we're back. We're here to share the spooky. And boy, we have some great stories today. First of all, I wanted to tell you about something I'm excited that's coming up in the next couple of weeks. And if you are in driving distance of northeastern Ohio, the Cleveland area, I highly recommend you check this out because very reasonable, and you are going to get to meet some great paranormal people, including myself. It's going to be the Kent Paranormal Weekend. That's the Kent Paranormal Weekend. You can find out more information at thekentstage.com or at facebook.com/Kent Paranormal Weekend. And you're going to get 2 days of spookiness with Jeff Belanger. Of course, author. He has his great ghostvillage.com. He's been very involved with the paranormal TV shows and so forth. He is worth the price of admission alone. Then layer on to that, Nick Redfern. He's going to be there, as I understand it, on Saturday. And he's Mr. Cryptid, Mr. UFO, and a prolific author, one of the biggest authors out in the paranormal. And then you're going to have the Haunted Housewives are going to be there as well, talking about their paranormal investigations, plus a whole other array of great paranormal people. And as maybe a little bonus, if you're listening to this show, me, I'm going to be leading panel discussions with all of those different great guests over the 2 day weekend there, Saturday and Sunday, April 29th and 30th. Also giving my own talk on campfire stories, some of my favorite campfire stories. I'll have books there and I'll be able to meet you. So if you've ever wanted to meet all those people I talked about and me, I would like to see you April 29th and April 30th in Kent, Ohio. It's not too far from Cleveland. And if you're within a couple hours of driving distance or something, I would highly recommend it because the ticket prices are very, very reasonable. You get to meet some great paranormal people. You get to hear a great amount of presentations. There'll be vendors there. They're also going to have an after-hours ghost hunt, which is optional. It's extra, but you can sign up for that. So it is the Kent Paranormal Weekend 2017. I hope you can make it. I hope to see you there. Facebook.com/Kent Paranormal Weekend for more info or thekentstage.com. So thank you for bearing with me on that, but I wanted to make sure everybody knew about this because I think it's going to be a fantastic, fantastic event. And now, with no further ado, we're going to get to the spooky. Some great stories this week. Here's a campfire. Well, we have quite a treat coming up here on the campfire. We have a mother and daughter team. Now, we're going to start off with Anna. Anna is over on our virtual campfire group, and she was telling some stories about her mom and her family's experience with spirits in Arizona. They're calling from Arizona tonight. And Anna said, yeah, I'd love to come on the show when my associate producer, Maddie, reached out. And then we have an extra bonus, though, because unbeknownst to us, joining us tonight will also be Anna's mom. And her nickname is Yo-Yo, and I have her permission to call her that. So we have Anna and Yo-Yo on the line, and they're going to tell us some of these fascinating stories. Welcome to both of you on the campfire. We appreciate it. And Anna, I don't know if you want to start it out, but tell us some of these great stories.
Sure. Well, you know, I have to tell you, on my mother's side of the family, they have always had premonitions and feelings and things like that ever since I've ever known them. And, from a young age,
right,
my mother would tell me of stories that they had happened with them. But the one in particular, I think that we were, that at least you called us on, was when she lived in Nogales, Arizona.
Okay.
And she lived in a house. It's no longer there now. It was torn down so that they could make a road there. And again, that's like my mom's here, but she had told me that my mom's an identical twin.
Mm.
And her identical twin passed away about 4 years ago.
Mm.
But they didn't have a lot of money. They at that time, it's like they had rented the house from somebody, and they lived in the house. And that she had told me that that at night they would fight to see who was not going to sleep at the edge of the bed because there was spirits that would be at the end of the the side of the bed.
Oh wow!
And there was an Indian. She told me that had feathers, huge feathers, that would come out, you know, on the side of the I don't know what you call that, the head. You know, help me with that. It's like, but you know, it was
the headband.
Yeah. And so and then she said there was an older woman. That was probably, Mom, would you say, like in the 1800s?
Yeah, about that, I would say, yes. Her hair pulled back in a bun and old-fashioned clothes, but she had a white collar on and no makeup. She would just look at us. And there was a third person there, which I don't remember, to be honest with you. But anyway, they would always be there. This continued, and we'd go down and play. We lived by the border, like I say. So we'd go to the park and then come back home. Anyways, we got to the house. We'd see this woman leaning against the side of a door. I don't know how you would call it. But anyway, she would be there, and so we were afraid to go home. But when we got up close, she'd be gone. Then there was the house where we lived. The next door had a high wall, and on the other side of the wall was this house. And you'd hear parties and going on it was just so good fun. And so when we'd look up, there was nobody there.
Huh.
I mean, the house was nobody there. It was dark and nobody lived there.
Wow.
With the time I heard that the house had been down, when they built the road, they found...
My cousin worked for the Arizona Department of Transportation. And he had told my mother at the time when they tore down that home, they had found that there was... a chest of coins that they had found there. So, you know, I can understand why they were there, why they were probably there. I mean, I don't, you know, maybe there was some, in my mind, it's like maybe they were there protecting it or whatever it was. I don't know why they were buried there, but it was there in that house.
So you think there were some kind of spirits or something protecting it maybe?
Yeah, I think so. But you know, it's like my mom's side of the family, they've had, numerous situations. And I've heard, actually so many stories from her and even from my husband's side. So I totally believe that, you know, I had a small experience, but I don't want to say small. It's like, I experienced something as well, but you know, just from everything I've heard from everybody, I know that that it's out there. That there are spirits that are still with us. For whatever reason, they're here.
Oh, I'm more convinced than ever. All of the people I've talked to on our programs, I'm absolutely convinced. Yo-Yo, do you have anything to add about that house or those experiences?
Well, there was always something going on, and I was. At the time I was little, you know, so whenever we'd feel something that we weren't alone, because my mother would go where we were working, I think it was at that time at night. She'd come home about 10 or something like that. Anyway, we were home alone, and so we'd be afraid because we felt like somebody was around, but we didn't see anything really. And that house had a cellar with one of those old doors that you open up, you know, from the ground up.
Yep.
And we'd hear the knocking on the like somebody wanted to get out.
Ooh.
So that's when we'd run out out of the house.
I don't blame you. Well, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say also my mother's grandmother had told me a story where she had she was living in a home and she was making tortillas. And it was this was in Mexico. She was making these tortillas with her sister, and all of a sudden she looked at her sister, and her sister just kind of just had this gaze, you know, this just blank stare.
She dropped the tortillas.
Yeah,
that she was making.
She dropped them, and then she looked over, you know, to where she was looking at, and she saw this woman that had just this beautiful gown with all this jewelry, and she was so lovely, and she was walking down, and then she just walked right into the wall.
Wow. Wow. So, that would make me drop my tortillas too.
No, I'll tell you what has bothered me. It hasn't bothered me because if I'm 88 and you feel something's going to happen sometime, right? Well, my twin passed away about, like she says, 6 years ago. It's not 4 years ago. But anyway, just about a month after she passed away, I felt her. I was looking. I don't know if I was asleep or if I was just looking, but I felt her come to my side and tell me, "Don't worry, you're going to live to 90."
Wow.
And anyway, you know,
I said, I don't want to know when I'm going to die.
No, I'm with you guys. So, I'd like to keep it a mystery.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it wasn't, I didn't feel afraid or anything like that. So it's okay.
Well,
you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. And I've got to tell you, you sound fantastic. So I think they were wrong. I think you're going to make it past 100 easily because you sound great.
Well, that's what they tell me, but
I do want to say one other story.
Sure.
My mom's sister, who's passed now, she took care of my mother's mother, my grandmother, and she took care of her for many years. And then she ended up actually going to California to go visit her other daughter. And while she was gone, my aunt had dropped a mirror and she broke it, and she got a call that day that that her mother had passed, which was very strange. You know, it was just, you know, she thought maybe it's just, you know, a coincidence or whatever it was. I mean, it was just strange. But then years later, my mother was with her sister, the same sister, and we were actually visiting my father. They were separated. And my aunt broke another mirror, and she said, "Oh my God, somebody's going to die."
Mm-hmm.
And my mother got a call that day that my father had passed away.
Oh my! And I've heard stories like that so many times. I believe that kind of thing happens. I really do.
Yeah. So we just told my aunt, "You can never carry another mirror."
We had one caller, and longtime listeners will remember this. We had one caller years ago who said that there was a picture that was a family picture, and it belonged, I believe, to an aunt or his grandmother. I can't remember. Thomas is the name of the caller. I believe he's from Illinois. He's an illustrationist and been a longtime listener. He's probably listening right now. And he talked about this family member. I think it was either an aunt or a grandmother, and it was a family picture. And the picture started falling off the wall. And it was well placed, and the nail was at an angle, so there was no reason it should fall off, but it would keep falling off the wall. And every time it would fall off the wall, a different person in that picture would die. And finally, she took the picture down. She said, "Enough is enough."
Oh, my gosh.
Well,
you know, my mom had actually gone to Mexico. This was years before my father passed away, and she had gone with my cousin, and we actually all went, but they went to go see a fortune teller, and the fortune teller told her, that actually told my cousin that you would marry a man with the initials MH. And she actually did. She married a man that had those exact initials.
Wow.
And then my mother talked to the woman, and the woman said, you will have somebody very close to you murdered, and you will have somebody else very close to you that will have basically a mental breakdown. And that came to fruition.
Wow. Wow. Great stories, I've got to say. And I love this multi-generation calling. You know, folks, if you're listening out there, if you've got maybe you're listening and you've got either a parent, it could be somebody, Yo-Yo is 88 years old, so don't let that stop you. She's done a fantastic job tonight. She's just been great. And maybe, or you've got you're on the other side of it, and you're the mom, and maybe you've got a daughter. I would love to have more multi-generational callers like this on the show. I certainly appreciate it. So, Anna and Yo-Yo.
You know what? I'd like to end this story with a little quick, little fun story.
Sure.
My mother used to always say, she's very superstitious. She said, do not leave your hats on the bed.
Mm-hmm.
Do not do that. That's bad luck. So one day I left my hat on the bed. My girlfriend was over. My mom took that hat and she flung it across, off the bed, and it broke something. And my girlfriend looked at me and said, you're right. It is bad luck to have a hat on your bed.
I like that. Anna, Yo-Yo, thank you for joining us with these great stories tonight.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
Matt is calling in from the UK, Wales to be specific. Now, it's very late over there, so he stayed up late. And he's going to stay up late to tell us a great story, this one about an experience of a friend of his on the London Underground. Matt, welcome to the program, and please tell us what happened.
Hello there. Yeah. Well, a friend of mine, this is only probably a couple of years ago now, was on the London Underground. He can't quite remember the line, but I think it might have been the Black Line, the Northern Line.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't feeling too good that day. I think he was having trouble with a relationship or something, a girl he was seeing. So he was feeling kind of glum. And he was sitting on the carriage mid-afternoon, a little bit later in the afternoon, people coming back from work, and he noticed this Australian lady sitting opposite him,
mm-hmm.
who was mm-hmm. chatting to a fella there, half falling asleep, and saying to him, kind of, they seemed to know each other. It looked like they knew each other because she's asking questions about his job and said, you've only just started, but you're not kind of too sure about this job, are you? And they were in conversation. He wasn't really paying much attention until this bloke got off the train. Someone else got on. Sat next to this lady again, and she started to speak to him as well in the same kind of personal tones of, you need to have a holiday and certain things this person wouldn't really know. And it just seemed, especially on the London Underground, people don't usually talk to each other unless they know each other. So my friend Chris started to listen in a little bit, and this went on for a little while, and then she got up to get to get off the station that my friend Chris was getting off. And as she was waiting by the double doors of the train, she was speaking to two other people, similar stuff. You're not too happy with your job, and
right.
So Chris was really sort of. And they were responding in a way to her that was very positive. This was the thing that he noticed. It was the pattern. Everyone that spoke responding back were like, yeah, yeah. And they were kind of really kind of felt energized by this woman who was probably in a sort of early 40s, I guess. Because I asked him what was she wearing and everything. Because I spoke to him only a couple of days ago about it just to get the details. Was there anything odd? Was she dressed differently or anything? She said, no, just similar clothes to everyone else, really.
Right.
So anyway, he followed her up an escalator. Now, this is quite specific. This is where the story gets kind of spooky. But it was only – she was in front of him. There was no one in front of her. There was a few people behind Chris, but quite a few steps down, not within earshot, really. And there was only one escalator going up. This is, I think, the Northern Line, where you'll go through one escalator only and through a tunnel and somewhere. So there was no way of getting back down or any other way, but forward, really. And he was curious, so he kind of caught up with her. And I asked him, he was about three steps below her on the escalator. And he sort of looked at her, and she said to my friend Chris, "Oh, you know, you've got to let it go." And he's like, "Oh, yeah, yeah." He wasn't quite sure. He said, "No, you've got to let it go." And he said, "What do you mean?" He said, "If you don't let go of your stress, and the pressure you're under, your she said your organs will heat up, and you could get a cancer." She said, "That's why I'm down." She said, "I've got to tell you this."
Huh.
And he was thinking, "I don't know this woman. This is personal. This is strange, right?" So he was, as I say, three steps away from her on the escalator. She got up to the top, and there was a left turn into a tunnel. And he's thinking, "I've got to catch up and speak to her." So he goes around the tunnel, and there's no one there. Empty for, I think, about 100 yards down. No one there at all. She's disappeared. And he's thinking, this isn't right. So he goes down this. He's thinking, well, there's no way she could have sprinted down this tunnel. So he's panicking. He's thinking, he said to me the other day, he felt very shaken talking about it.
Sure.
He got to the bottom. I said, "Well, then what, you know, was there any?" He said he got to the end of this tunnel, and there was a porter, like an underground staff, and said to him, "Look, please, is there any way in this tunnel anyone could do a left or a right before they get to you?" He said, "No, it's a sealed tunnel. You know, you can only go ahead." He said, "Well, did you see this Australian woman?" He said, "No, you're the first person to come past."
Wow. So
it's kind of freaked him out quite a bit, really. And as I say, he spoke to me a couple of days about this, and his hands were shaking again. He said it was too strange. So I don't know, Angel of the Underground, he said. She was brightening up a lot of people that were either falling asleep or looking quite glum. And that's why he took an interest in this lady in the first place. So I don't know. Is it what I've heard on your show as a head scratcher?
That's exactly what I was going to say. You took the words right out of my mouth. I love that story. To think that there's somebody, you know, we always think of these things that visit us many times as negative, but I would say this is a positive. This was, like you said, an angel, someone who wanted to help people and wanted to help your friend. Did he take her advice, and did he try to cut down on his stress a bit?
A little bit, but to be honest, he's in quite a high pressure job within the music industry. And I said to him yesterday, he needs to just come up to here and have a break in the countryside. But he's still, he went out for a jog the other day. That's as far as he's got, as far as calming down.
Well, I hope he can control his nerves and ease up a little bit. And that is such a great story. First of all, I mean, you stayed up very late to share this, so thank you for that, and thank you for being a part of the Campfire.
It's a pleasure.
If you like Campfire, you'll want to check out Jim's other free podcasts. Be sure to tune into the Paranormal Podcast, Crime Scene, and TV You Grew Up With. You can find them at jimharrell.com and wherever fine podcasts are heard. Check them out. Bet you can't listen to just one. Put the blankets over your head. Now we return to Campfire.
Maria is on the line from Maryland, and she's going to tell us about a visit to a graveyard. It already sounds spooky. Maria, welcome to the program, and tell us what happened.
Hi. Thank you for having me. Okay, so a friend of mine, we work together, and she is pretty adventurous. And so what she did was she had talked me into going to visit this graveyard on the site where we worked. We worked on a post, you know, a military post.
Okay.
And I don't like graveyards. Haven't liked them since I was young. And so what she did was she just kept asking me and asking me to go. So her boyfriend, actually, he worked on for DPW. If you're not familiar with what that is, it's, you know, they cut the grass and do everything like that. So what happened was he had seen this graveyard from the 1800s. So she was really excited about it. So she convinced me to go, and I was just still really reluctant, but I went with her. So, and it was just a day or two before I was leaving the job. So we went, And I was telling my family before that I was going to go, and they didn't want me to go, but I went anyway. I was a little hard-headed. So we had pulled up to the graveyard, and you could tell it was very old. And, you know, some of the stones, the headstones were, you couldn't really see, you know, the names on it. And some of them was turned over, right. And you know they were stone, and it had weeds around it. If it was nighttime, never would have went there because it was spooky.
Don't blame.
You know, it was spooky even in the daytime. So she had to convince me to get out of the car, and so you know we were really close. You know, she playing around, held my hand. We got out. So it was. Children buried there from the 1800s. So I went there and we went in and, you know, walked around and everything. And then I was done. We went back. We left. Okay. So then we talked about it a little bit at work. And I'm going to make a long story short. So we talked about it when we were at work, but we didn't tell anybody about it. So then that night I was sleeping and I felt something push my head. And so I just thought, you know, maybe my hair got caught when I was turning over. So I went back to sleep. So then I felt a harder push. And so I looked around. I said, well, maybe somebody came in my room or something to wake me up. But when I looked, I saw this like a gray figure. It was like a light, you know, shining down on this gray figure. And when my eyes came into focus, it was this little girl, maybe about 9 or 10 years old. And she was dressed in white. White bonnet on her head, and she said, why did you come to visit us? I said, oh no. Then I said, you know what, maybe I'm just dreaming. Then the next day I went to work, I told my friend about it, and she said, oh no. And she was just like, she was kind of blown away, and then but we thought it was a dream. I brushed it off. So then you know, I had my little early retirement party and everything, and went on about my business. And then maybe a month or so later, it happened again. I'm sleeping, felt somebody shaking my foot.
Oh, my.
I wake up, and here's this little girl again. And she waves to me. Okay, this is not a dream. So what happened was I actually had an attachment when I went there.
So you had a hanger-on who came back with you.
Exactly. She attached herself to me. So, you know, I went through this it went on for a while. She would do little jokes, and, you know, she would laugh sometimes. As a matter of fact, one time my brother, I didn't tell him about it, and one time he asked me, did we have, because I was going to adopt, and so he wasn't here that often, or he thought I had brought a foster child in the house, and he heard a child giggling in our house. So he asked me, was the child here? I said, no. And so when I told him the story, he will not come to our house by himself anymore. He won't, because he heard her giggling. And when my nephews came here, they're staying with us now. But she was very angry about it, and she showed her anger. And my dog even picked it up when she was here. And I had mentioned it, you know, on our social media site. And I didn't say, you know, like it was a child here or anything. But one of my followers, Ashley, sensed that it was a child in our house. And I said, you know what? You're right.
Now,
it is.
Now, question for you. I know you said that you write short stories, and do they deal with the supernatural?
They do.
And where can people find those on the internet?
Okay. So I write a series on, it's www.chanillo, is chanillo.com. If they put my name in there, then they can find my series. And the series is called Unearthly Spirits, and it's going to be, and it's stories of true stories of ghost encounters.
Well,
and they would see that. I write because I've seen spirits since I was 7 years old.
Well, Maria, I thank you for joining us today on The Campfire, sharing your stories, and hopefully people will check out more of them online. Thanks again, Maria.
Thank you so much. You are so welcome. Thank you for having me.
Karen is on the line from beautiful Hawaii. I'm envious. And most of you are, too, if you tell the truth. And she's been listening since November, and she has a story to tell about in her teenage years. Karen, welcome to the program, and tell us what happened.
Hi, Jim. Thank you for having me on the program. Well, the story took place when I was 13 years old. I grew up in North Salem, New York, which is in northern Westchester on the Connecticut border. And I had been babysitting for my neighbors for some time. And they called me and they said, oh, we just met this new couple. They moved into a house on Cat Ridge Road. And they need a babysitter for Saturday night. Are you interested? And I was like, sure. I was, you know, saving pocket money. And since, you know, I had the recommendation of my neighbors, I thought this was just fine. And Cat Ridge Road is a road just off of the road we lived on. It wasn't too far. And I knew the road. It's a road that went into the woods. And there are only a couple houses on it. A couple houses at the far end, and then there was one house in the middle of it, which was this big, old, abandoned, as far as I knew, estate that, you know, all everyone in town knew about because there was a little cemetery right by it, the Cat Ridge Road Cemetery. All the kids in high school on Halloween would go to the cemetery and dare each other to go inside the crypt, because the crypt door, the hinges were off the door, and it was a thing. So I knew it couldn't have possibly been that house, because as far as I knew, it was abandoned. And I figured it was the house at the far end of the road. So the night came, Saturday night, and we'll call the family the Smith. And Mrs. Smith picks me up and, you know, was saying, oh, my daughter is, she just turned 6 years old, and we'll call her Christina, and baby Ken. And baby Ken was about 10 months old. And so I'll just put him to bed, and, you know, Christina can stay up with you until we come home. You know, all the regular babysitting stuff a mom would tell a kid.
Sure.
And so we're driving up Cat Ridge Road, and she turns into the long, winding drive of the abandoned mansion. And I said, oh, you live here? She said, oh, yes, you know, we just moved in. We're renting it. It's a rental. So I had never actually been down to the end of the driveway. You could only see the house from the road in the winter when the leaves were off the trees. And so we're driving down, and it's this huge brick. I didn't know at the time, but I know now. It's a Georgian neo-colonial, and it was massive with two wings, and it was very overgrown. The grounds were very overgrown. It was, the house was kind of dilapidated, but you could tell it was a grand estate at one time. It was the Woolworth estate, an heir of the Woolworth fortune, the old department store. I knew it was the Woolworth estate because I remember my mom had mentioned that. So I'm looking around, and there's a old greenhouse that's all falling in with broken windows, and there's an old pool that the cement is cracked and weeds are coming up, and the house itself just is this big looming hulk. So I'm thinking, okay, it's not the other house I thought it was, but okay. So we go in the front door, and the first thing you see when you walk in is this enormous foyer with a big staircase at the end. And it was the kind of staircase where there was a staircase on the left and the right that curved up to a landing and then went up to the second floor, very grand. But it was kind of dimly lit because it was big and there was just only a few lights. And we walk in and I look to this big room to my left, and it's dark, and all the furniture in the room is still covered with dust covers. And she said, oh, we don't use that room. And just the whole house had a feeling of disuse. they hadn't been there very long. It certainly did not feel lived in. So she leads me into the kitchen, and it's a big old-fashioned kitchen that I don't think had been renovated. I looked up the house since, and it was built in 1934. It looked like the kitchen looked like a time capsule to me. And sitting at the kitchen table was a little girl and a little boy in a high chair, and an old woman was feeding the little boy. And the mom, Mrs. Smith, never even introduced me to her. As soon as we came in, the old woman just kind of packed up and left. And I just looked around, and the mom was giving me instructions, and she said, yes, she would put the baby to bed, and he's a good sleeper. He should just sleep right through. There shouldn't be a problem. And so I was sitting at the kitchen table while she took the baby upstairs to put him to bed, and I was just trying to chat with the little girl, Christina, who's finishing her dinner. And she was very sullen and somber. You know, I thought she's shy. And I did notice right away, though, that she was dressed like not like this was 1974. So she wasn't dressed like, you know, what would be considered the mod look then. She was dressed like really old fashioned. She had like this longish chambray kind of dress with a big sash and a little round collar all the way up to her chin. And it was just sort of interesting. It was almost like, okay, you know, so it's an old fashioned dress, whatever. And the little girl did not say much to me. She just kind of was studying me, and I was just kind of chit-chatting, trying to make small talk and draw her out a little. And the mom left, and I said, okay, well, do you want to show me your bedroom? And there was a stairwell up in the kitchen, right off the kitchen. And I said, should we go up this way? She said, no, we don't use those stairs. Those are the servant stairs. I said, oh, do you have servants? And she said, no. I said, okay. So she led me upstairs to her room. We walked up the big grand staircase, and she takes me to a room at the top of the stairs. And there, it's an old house, so her room had a sitting room before the actual bedroom with, you know, closed doors, a whole separate room. And in that room, there were shelves with dolls, lots and lots of fancy dolls with porcelain faces, and lots of them. Like, oh, a little creepy. I'm trying to tell myself, no, this isn't really creepy. This is all just normal. This little girl's not creepy. She's normal. I was kind of giving myself a pep talk because it certainly was starting to feel creepy. I said, oh, are these your dolls? And she said, no, they're my mother's. Don't touch them. So that's okay. And she leads me into her bedroom. There's a big canopy bed and a little vanity. It's like a princess room. I said, oh, this is a nice room. And she starts to, you know, become a little more chatty. And I say, so you're in kindergarten. Do you like kindergarten? And she said, no. I said, why not? She said, my teacher hates me. I said, oh, I doubt your teacher hates you. I mean, she's a kindergarten teacher. No, she hates me. She tells all the other kids in the class to gather around me in a circle and tease me and say mean things until I cry. And then when I start crying, she says, good work, kids. And so I just got creeped out when she said that. So I was like, okay. And I said, oh, so you want to show me the rest of the house? And we walk back out into the hall, and I point down the wing, because there's wings. It's such a big old house, a mansion, really. And I said, what's down this way? And she said, my brother McDougal's room. I said, oh, I didn't know you had another brother. Is he a big brother? And she said, yes. I said, oh, is he away at boarding school? She looked down at her feet and hung her head and shook her head no. She said, no, he's at sleepaway school. And I said, oh, isn't that the same as boarding school? And she shook her head and said, no, sleepaway school. So I was like, okay. First I heard about a big brother named McDougal. So then we go to the parents' room, because that's where the TV was. We were told we could hang out and watch TV. And the parents' room was totally normal. And
the baby's room was down the hall on the other, in the other wing, like at the end of the hall. It was really far away. So I kept cracked the door open, the parents' room. I figured I'd hear the baby cry. So if he needed me. So we're sitting on the parents' bed and we turn on the TV, and back in the day we were watching Mary Tyler Moore Show, and we hear a knocking on the wall, like a very distinct knocking on the wall. And she goes, "It's back." And I said, "What's back?" And she just was kind of like not saying anything, but looking really, really scared. And I said, "Oh, you know, I think it was probably just the pipes in the wall. This is an old house. And, you know, sometimes the plumbing." And she goes, "No, no, it's not the plumbing. My parents didn't want to tell you, but we think we have a ghost in the house."
Oh, my.
I was like, okay. Now, you know, my creepy, creepy feeling just started to intensify. And she said, "It's not just the knocking. Sometimes we wake up in the morning and we go into the kitchen and all the cupboards are open. And once there was a bag of flour spilled all over the floor. It happens all the time." I said, "Okay." And she said, "And it's not just that. Sometimes we hear footsteps." And I'm like, "Oh, you know, maybe it's just your parents." And she said, no, it's not my parents. It's different." And I was like, "Okay." He said, "And once I woke up at night and I heard a piano playing." I said, "Well, that was probably just your parents playing the piano." "But we don't have a piano."
Oh.
So I was really super creeped out. And she was really, really upset. And she was telling me, you know, all sorts of things that have been happening. And I was 13. I was scared. I was really scared. And I was just trying to hold it together because, you know, I was the one in charge. And she was really, really freaked out. So I was trying to calm her down. And she said, "We have to go check baby Ken." And I said, "Why, did you hear him cry?" And she said, "No." And I turned off the TV and we listened and it was quiet down the hall. So we have to go check on him. He might have swallowed a diaper pin. This was back before disposable diapers even. And I was like, "I doubt he swallowed a pin, but okay, you know." She was adamant we go check the baby. And I did not want to leave the parents' room because that was like the only sort of normal room in the whole house. But we were holding hands and we walked down the hall. We checked the baby. He was sound asleep. Everything was fine. We turned around in the hall. We started to walk back to the parents' room. And it was like in the middle of the hall, we walked into a meat locker, like a stand-up freezer, like a walk-in freezer. It was like we walked into just a wall of dense cold. And she started moaning and she threw her arms around my legs. And I wanted to like run, you know, back to the bedroom and shut the door because I felt it too. You know, every hair on my body was standing on end at this point because we just walked from like a normal temperature into a wall of cold. It was so eerie. And I was like, "Let me go, let me go." And I peeled her off of me and I grabbed her hand and I ran back into the parents' room and I shut the door. I said, "Okay, you know, I'm calling the parents." She was sobbing. She said, "Oh," she was just sobbing. And I said, "This is it." And back in the day, you know, it was no cell phones. It wasn't a casual thing, you know, to get the number out and to call them up. They were out at a chamber music performance in Connecticut. And I called them and I got the people at the place and I asked them to go find Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And Mrs. Smith comes to the phone and they said, "Your daughter is really upset. She's crying and she really wants you to come home. She's scared." You know, I didn't want to tell them that, you know, there's a ghost, even though they knew. I couldn't quite bring myself to say it. I'm like, "She's really, really upset and she really wants you to come home." You know, the truth was I really wanted to get out of there, of course. So the mom said, "Well, the performance is almost over and then we'll come right home. We'll be home, between a half an hour and an hour." And to me, that seemed like an eternity at this point. I was beside myself. I was shaken. I was so scared. I'm actually shaken now just telling the story because I was so scared. So she and I crawl into bed. We turn the TV back on. We turn the volume up really, really loud to drown out any weird noises. And we just kind of sit there with the blankets up to our chin, just like huddled there watching, trying to watch. I don't know what was on, Mary Tyler Moore, whatever comes on after that. We were kind of just like, just hunkered down. And finally the parents came home and she was crying and she told them, "It's back, it's back, it's back." And the dad goes, "Ho, ho, ho, well, we didn't want to tell you, but you know, we think there's a ghost in the house." And I was thinking very unkind things at that point. And the mom drove me home. I told my parents and they said, "You are not allowed ever to babysit there again." I said, "You don't have to tell me twice." So that's my story.
Yeah, babysitting at a haunted house. Well, quite a story. We thank you for sharing it tonight on The Campfire.
Thank you, Jim.
Sandy is joining us from Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. And she's a newer listener, well-educated, but she's one of those people who experiences a lot of things, and she's going to tell us about some of them. Sandy, welcome to the program. We appreciate it, and please tell us about some of these strange happenings.
Thanks so much, Jim. I came to you for answers, and I've been getting a lot of information that's helped me put together some events that have been going on in my house really for, I'd say, almost two decades. And I think I've been able to piece them together in a way that point to a promise my grandmother made me, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So there's a very quick backstory I have to give you. And it involves both my grandparents. My grandfather was a physician. My grandmother was a nurse for him. And he died years ago in the fall. And that Christmas, my mom and her sister from California all got together at my parents' house in Pennsylvania. They brought Grandma down, who was paralyzed and in a wheelchair, to spend Christmas with us. And Christmas Eve, we were sitting around my parents' living room, just sitting in the dark, remembering Grandpa, telling stories and, you know, crying, just having one of those sentimental evenings. And my younger brother marches in the room and just started to give me a hard time, like brothers do. Excuse me. And Grandma told him to knock it off. And he didn't. And at the far end of the room, this was a big house kind of in the country, old farmhouse. At the far end of the room was a huge cherry table filled with pictures. And as soon as he started up again, giving me a hard time, of all the pictures, my grandfather's slammed down on his face on the table.
Oh, my.
Yeah, right, right. And so we all were stunned into silence. Even my brother. And what was interesting about that was nobody was moving. It was a solidly built house. We kids had run by that table a million times. So at the end of the day, Grandma strongly believed that Grandpa was giving us a sign and telling my brother not only to knock it off, but to let us know that he was with us. Okay, so with that in mind, excuse me, several years later, Grandma came down with terminal cancer and came to live with my parents in the countryside permanently. She refused treatment and just wanted her final year to be a good one. And one of her favorite things to do was look at the wildlife from the windows, and especially the deer, who all had names. In the meantime, her cancer was a fast-growing one, and it was starting to really take over her functions, and it was clear to us that it wasn't going to be long. So one day, I was living in Delaware at the time. I was coming over on weekends, and we were talking about death. And I told her that I could handle her dying if I just knew she was okay and was safe with Grandpa. And she promised me to give me a sign if she could. So we set up some rules. We had four rules. And the first was it would be nothing scary, because she knew I sleep with lights on, even at my age now.
Right.
Nothing at night. No ghostly image of herself. And finally, and the most important one, the sign had to be so obvious that I wouldn't mistake it. There would be no question in my mind. Okay, so rushing right along here. A couple months later, she lapsed into a coma, and that evening, I came over from Delaware. My parents and I were standing around her bed, and all of a sudden, my dad glanced out the window and saw right outside the window, facing her window, a buck, a male deer. Now, for anyone who's grown up in the country, you may see doe a lot, but it's very, very
That's
rare
right.
to see the buck. Yeah, you know that. Yeah, unless it's like rutting season or something. Well, and they're usually running. I mean, you never see them just standing. This one, and I should describe, they have a field out away from the house, and then they had a swimming pool and a gate like right up next to the house. It was inside the gate. Somehow it had hopped the gate. So it was right under her window, right up next to the house, just facing the house. So we were like, wow, isn't that kind of neat? Grandpa came for grandma, and sure enough, the next day she died. Fast forward, we're getting ready for the funeral up in Boston, and a few days later, Mom and I were back in grandma's room, just pulling some things together to take to her sister, and Mom yelled at me to come over to the window. There, underneath the window, was the buck, and standing next to the buck was a doe. Just both had hopped the fence. It sounds almost contrived, doesn't it? It's a beautiful story, and everyone thought, okay, Sandy, there's your sign. And maybe years later now I can look back and go, okay, that was sort of a sign, but to me it didn't fit the fourth rule, which was it would be obvious. To me, it was just sort of a coincidence of nature. So fast forward, I'm almost done fast forwarding. A few years later, I married and had my son, David, and I live on the edge of an historical battlefield. Excuse me. And from the minute I moved in this house, there were footsteps and things going on, mostly footsteps. So one day when my son was about a year old, I was cleaning the house, and I had some built-ins in the corner, and on the very top shelf was Grandma's picture, and next to it was her naturalization certificate from Canada. And I can't believe I'm going to say this publicly, but I began talking to the pictures, and I just said, you know, how much I missed her, that the women in my family are really close, and I love older people. I think we can learn so much from them, and I really just was missing her, especially once I became a mom, missing her advice. And that's the kind of thing I shared with her. So 2 days later, I was literally around the corner in the laundry room, which abuts the room I was in and right up next to the built-ins. I was just folding laundry, and my son was just a year old, standing at the window, licking the cold glass. And this was actually on Halloween, which I debated leaving out of the story because it sounds kind of hokey or forced, but maybe it means something to someone. But all of a sudden I heard a crash, and my son, he had like a little startled cry. And I came rushing into the family room, and there, way out in the middle of the room, was Grandma's picture and her framed naturalization certificate from Canada. And to me, that was the sign, because she always felt like the sign from Grandpa was the picture being knocked over. And so I just, now that it was the same situation, and it was on such a high shelf. I mean, my son was only 14 months old. Mm-hmm. He was a late walker too. It was all he could do to hold himself up and lick the glass, you know? So, but then literally that just started a firestorm of things revolving my son mostly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would change his diaper, and literally, one time a little toy flew out from across the table and landed at my feet. There was nothing there to push it. Broken toys. If I'd go in his room at night, the minute I'd open up the door, one time I heard a toy in the closet that was broken start to play a lullaby. Another time I went in, and way up high on his bookshelf was one of those wind-up toys. The minute I went in the room, it started to sing, "Who are the people in your neighborhood?" which I found ironic, man. You know. I know, right? And then lights turning on. One time I let him get up from bed and sit up with me for a half hour in the dark. And when I told him to go to bed and he refused, the light switched on right above his head. And what's even weirder about that is all my lights are on an X10 system. So I can turn them off when I go upstairs. You know, you just hit one button and they all go on or off. But that one light, couple times when he knocked his oatmeal off the high chair, and I not yelled at him in a mean way, but just, you know, it reprimanded him. The back door slammed open to the outside. So many things. I'm just trying to keep this short, but I'd walk by a garage door and, you know, those garage doors are, you know, they're fire doors. So they're right. Very, very heavy. And right. Mine, even when it's shut, everyone usually thinks it's locked. I'd walk by it into the laundry room, come out, and it's wide open. Footsteps. I can't tell you how many times I've heard footsteps upstairs go running up to, take my ex-husband coffee in the morning. I'd hear him up, you know, and I work at home. So I would just take him a cup of coffee and I would be sure he was up. You know, you can tell footsteps. They're rhythmic. The floorboards squeak. Sure. He'd be sound asleep and the dog would be next to him. And you know, if someone's up, the dog, once it gets up, it's shaking its collar. It wants to go outside.
Right.
So it's just all of these things. The cable guy one time was staying late and had to go work. He told me he had another job. And when I asked him what he had to do, he said he was debating telling me that he was a ghost hunter, that he grew up seeing spirits and feeling them. And he said he had been debating all day telling me something, but he said, there's an old lady in your house, but don't be scared because I can feel her tremendous love for you. So it's just been, I mean, I could go on and on and on. And disappearing items showing up in the guest room. And what's weird is my ex-husband gave me a watch one time at Christmas and after our son was born, and I'd taken it off New Year's Eve for a party and we were doing dishes, and the next day it wasn't on the bookcase where I put it. And we scoured the house. I went to bed and I said, Grandma, if you know where it is. Now, this sounds crazy. We searched for it for 2 days. In the middle of the night, I went up and usually I use the bathroom attached to my bedroom. For some reason, this time I walked down a dark hall, went into the hall bath. And as I'm standing there, literally in the dark, the cat came in, rubbed against my leg. I followed it into the guest room, turned on a light, stood there for a second, and it was almost like my head was being pushed. All of a sudden, I just looked down and laughed hard, and there was my watch behind a lamp.
Oh, my goodness.
And at the time, my son was a baby. So it's just sort of these things. And they seem to revolve around toys. If my son was napping and I was doing something in the room where his toys are, and I would go back into the room, there would be Mr. Potato Head marching along, you know?
Oh, my.
Like, yeah, and that's how the toys starting, that happens a lot. I mean, so, well, now he's 16, but he told his barber one time that, and I found this, he didn't tell me, my son's like a 16-year-old football player now, so nothing scares him, sort of, you know, not really.
Right.
But, yeah, but he told his barber that he's afraid to be home alone because when I'm gone, which I always announce when I leave and come back,
right,
so he knows exactly, that he can hear footsteps above, he's down in the basement.
Oh, boy.
He can hear footsteps, so he sort of feels trapped in the basement when I'm gone. And water will start in the middle of the night, you know, that kind of thing. But anyway, so that's pretty much... I have more for another time because after my dad died and my best friend, the happenings in my house took on a whole new sort of, they were very different. So much more, not violent, but intense and much more kind of in your face. So, I definitely have to talk to you another time, but anyway, I just wanted to share that, and I don't know if anyone else, you know, I've heard some similar stories from other people, and I'm just looking to share and try to understand. I'm not going to go out and say I have a ghost, but it sure seems like something, you know, I don't know what's going on.
Well, I got to say something. It seems like these kind of things, either they attract you, you attract them. There's some kind of, do you have any theories on what might be going on? Why that is?
Well, my cousin, I've had a bunch of psychic instances. I had a really weird situation with Are you familiar with Brian Weiss?
Yes.
Yeah, I had a really weird situation with him. I actually dreamt my son's height and weight before he was born and sex.
Wow.
Wrote it down and I was right. I've dreamt four or five of my son's, I mean my friend's children, wrote it down and I was right. I had a weird visit one night from someone who woke me up. It was yelling at me in my sleep. It was very, very weird. And told me there was something urgent happening. I wrote down that something bad was going to happen, and literally the next morning, my grandfather had gone in the hospital the night before and died. So, I mean, I do have had these situations, but my cousin thinks they come to me. I don't really know. I think I'm open to it because she knows I was looking for the sign. And my dad, before he died, I told him he was welcome in my house, but just stay out of my bedroom and bathroom. You know, sort of like...
you want your privacy.
It was a joke, but I guess I've invited it to a degree. I also live in a very historical area outside Philly, where there's the Brandywine Battlefield. That was the last bloody event before Valley Forge. You know, and I have my son has a relative was a general in the Civil War, so I've got that in my bedroom, his sword. So, you know, I don't know. I really don't know. Maybe it's part I invited it, and part she's just attracted to the little great-grandson she never knew. I don't know.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate it, and thank you for being a part of the campfire.
Thank you so much. My next step is to join Paranormal Plus. So,
well,
anyway,
I
love it. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks so much for joining us on this week's Campfire. I really enjoyed it, and I think it was just a fantastic show. Some really fun and interesting stories this week. And I hope you'll join us next week. And I hope, again, April 29th and 30th, that you'll join me in Kent, Ohio. If you're in proximity to the northeastern Ohio area, I think it's a great opportunity to meet some great paranormal people, including yours truly, Jeff Belanger, Nick Redfern, the Haunted Housewives, and other ghost investigation teams and folks in the area that are involved in the spooky. And again, to get info on that, you can go to thekentstage.com. Kent is spelled K-E-N-T, by the way. Thekentstage.com or facebook.com/Kent Paranormal Weekend. And I hope to see you there. And we thank you so much for tuning into the Campfire. Please subscribe, rate, review, tell a friend, and most importantly, stay spooky. We'll talk to you next time on The Campfire. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.